Welcome to the Online Recovery Area Celebrate Around the World 2026 event. Next up, from the Netherlands and Ireland, it is with much love and gratitude that the group welcomes John E. and Mags D. to come and share with us. John, over to you.
Thank you, Kimia. Thank you. My name is John. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic and I love drugs. Thank you so much for everybody putting this together. Thanks, Pretty, for the invitation. Cameron, sorry I missed most of your workshop. I was in a convention meeting for Belgium and it took so long time that my brain was cooked. So I needed to do a little meditation before I come on here. I'm not so long in the online things, you know, but like Cameron just stated that now for the UK, you need some extra documents. For the States, you need some extra documents. And because of my, let's call it H&I activities before I came in recovery, I don't get this extra document. So I can't go to the UK anymore. I can't go to America. But if I go online, I get to see you beautiful people. Luckily, Ireland is still Europe. So in 1.5 weeks, go to the convention in Ireland. It's going to be fantastic. Really looking forward to that. But since a while ago, I started to do this online things and I just love it. I just love all the stories from you guys. So I'll share a little bit of my story. I'm a grateful member of Cocaine Anonymous. You know, Cocaine Anonymous is just, it saves my life. And my life is keep getting better and better, and I cannot express in words the gratitude that I have for this fellowship. But I will try to do so. My sobriety date is 20 June 2020. So in the summer I will be 6. But the things that I already got from this fellowship, I could never ever repay, even if I don't live to be 100 years old. When I came in, I was broken on every part, you know. I was hopeless. I almost died. But how did I get there? Oh, my cat wants to say hello. Hello. I started drinking when I was 13. I started using hashish when I was 13. And that stopped all my fears. As a young kid at school, you know, I was the tough guy. I was the clown. But I know now I was very afraid. And that's why I was always hiding these fears behind those masks of the clown, of the tough guy. But what happened was I got all kinds of nervous tics. I wet my bed until I was 13. I look under my bed 10 times before I go to sleep if there's no one there. I blink my eyes rapidly. I'm moving my hands and my feet. I can't sit still. The word ADHD, I think, wasn't invented yet, but they thought I had ADHD. I've been diagnosed a couple of times. But I was just scared and restless and irritable and discontent. And as a child, I already had panic attacks. Although I didn't even know I had panic attacks, you know, I couldn't breathe sometimes. And then they took me to the hospital and they were checking my lungs because they thought I had asthma, but I didn't have any asthma. You know, I was just so scared that I couldn't breathe. And when I started drinking and using, this all disappeared. This is my solution. My alcohol and my drugs is my solution. But the only problem with it is that I knew from the get-go that I had this allergic reaction. I didn't know that you called it an allergic reaction, but I just knew that if I take one, I cannot stop. And this continues like I'm a blackout drinker. I drink until I pass out. In the meantime, I take Coke to postpone my blackout. But that's how I drink and use from the get-go. I've started ruining lives at a very young age. You know, I was in a relationship at 17. I got married at 18, and with 19, I had a kid, and I was divorced, and I ruined their lives. And this son, I never was a father for him. And after divorce, my father died, you know, and I just could not handle this pain, this loss, this divorce, and my father dying. I just couldn't handle it, and I progressed, And then there was a guy that I was a friend of mine, and he had something that I wanted, you know. He had money, he had prestige, he had gold necklace and the silk shirts, and he was a criminal. And I wanted what he had, so I needed to do what he did, and I became a criminal. And that was a path of like 30 years of mayhem and destruction, and I ruined hundreds and hundreds of lives. For mostly for the people I love, you know, my partners, my children, my mother. I just ruined their lives. And I'm going to tell some beautiful stuff a little bit later on, but I just want you to know where I come from, right? In being a criminal, it's just I wanted to belong, you know. I want to belong to some people, and I want you guys to like me. And if I have money, you like me, and I belong with this group, and this group did terrible things, so I'm doing terrible things, and I want to be the toughest of the toughest. So I did horrible things, and I ended up for 10 years in prison as well. And the last time I came out of prison in 2009, I knew I needed to change. So I didn't want to go back to prison. I need to change, you know, but I still didn't figure out that maybe the alcohol and the drugs was a problem as well. And I already had a family. I was with a woman and we had a son. She was pregnant 5 months, and I got locked up in Iceland, and they gave me 6 years there. So I came home, and I had to do three. I had to do half only. But my son was 2.5 when I came out. And I started to work. I'm not good with my hands. I'm a good chef, but I know for me, working as a chef is not very healthy. And I thought I was very lucky, but I know now that God was already working for me when I didn't even know it. Because I met some people in a certain time, in a certain place, in a certain order, that it made possible for me with my history that I could be working in a school for troubled youth. And I started to help these youngsters, and I worked in a youth prison, and I became a youth coach, and I did several things like that. But still, I was drinking and using always, and I ruined that marriage. I'm just gonna fast forward to my last week of my using and drinking, and then I can talk about my recovery, right? In my last week, I just imploded of all the feelings that I just couldn't deal with. I was so angry, I was so afraid, and I was so full of self-pity. I know now that something happened that it was just a little thing, and I couldn't handle it. And I went on a binge for 8 days, and these 8 days, I lost everything that I worked so hard for. I lost my job. My youngest son was not allowed to come to me anymore. My oldest son, I haven't seen him for 2 years. I had a partner. She said, I will. I had a girlfriend that I really liked, and she said, I will support you as a friend, but not as a partner. And I came to a point that I almost died. And luckily, I had an ex-wife. She was so afraid that I was going to die that she called an ambulance, and the ambulance picked me up. I went to the hospital. And there I had this moment of clarity they speak of. I thought, what the hell am I doing, man? Everything is, I'm ruining every single thing. So I was there because my heart rate was like a maniac. I got some medicine, and they said that my heart slowed down. After a couple of hours, they said, you're good to go, you're okay. But I was far from okay. So I went home, and on the 20th of June, 2020, the first day that I didn't use anything. I got a delirium tremens. I was attacked by spiders as big as my fist. I was living in this little bungalow here, and the water was coming from the ceiling, and it dropped on my head. And I, somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew there is no water. And I stood up, and I touched the ceiling, and there was no water. And that was the moment for me with the white flag. Please help me. I cannot do this anymore. It took me a couple of days before I was able to make some phone calls, and I went to a treatment center, That was my best thinking. And I didn't want to go to a 12-step clinic because I had a friend who was in AA and I saw the word God in the steps. And I think that's not for me. But I thank God I ended up in a 12-step clinic. This book helped me a lot. But the best thing they did for me was introducing me to you guys. And once a week, there was a speaker. And in this treatment center, I started to feel so bad. I was eaten by guilt and shame and remorse. And I had all kinds of diagnoses. I had ADHD, PTSS, I had dissociating. I didn't even know what it meant. I had to Google it. And then there came a guy, and he was so calm. And I thought, wow, this guy is on Xanax. But apparently, he was doing what we're doing for. At that time, for 35 years. So he was that calm and he shared his experience and he told me how he forgave himself and he emphasized that four and five, where the beginning was of his self-forgiving. And I wanted what he had, so I needed to do what he did. And because he gave me so much hope, this step one was obvious for me. That was so obvious, but two and three were so difficult for me. But when this guy came and he gave me so much hope, I needed to go to step four and five. So two and three, what do you want me to do? You think something bigger? Yeah. What do you want me to do? Just pray. Okay, I'll pray. And from the moment I started praying to a God that I didn't believe in, things started to change, things started to happen. And I finished this treatment center and I came out of there and I just worked the steps in a pretty rapid pace. And my life took off as a rocket. The beautiful things happened. This woman that was going to support me as a friend, she became my partner. And soon we got plans to marry. And in June 2020, my youngest son was not allowed to see me anymore. In December of the same year, he came to live with me. With the permission of his mother, and he's living in my house now for 5 years, and I get to be a father. And I've been from the get-go. I indulge myself with service. They told me service is important, and it was so important that the first CA meeting I went when I got out of this treatment center, they gave me the key. I think they gave me the key. They trust me. They trust me with this key. And they said, "What do I?" I said, "What do I have to do with this key?" He said, "You have to be the first here to open up, and you have to be the last one to leave and close it." I say, "Yeah, okay. I lost my job, but soon I'll be working again. So we need to make a spare key." And there was a guy who was a little bit longer sober, and he looked at me and he said, "No, John. Just make sure you're here." And I haven't missed a meeting because of that key. And that was such an important thing for me, having that key, because if I'm not there, there's no meeting. That's not going to happen. And from there on, I was 6 months sober. I started doing H&I. And it's fantastic to do H&I, that I get to go to a prison. They let me in. I stay there for 1.5 hour. And they let me out again. And then they say, thank you. And that's a different experience that I get to have now. And it's so good to bring some hope to the people who don't have hope anymore, because I was one of those people who didn't have any hope anymore. And my journey in recovery became better and better and better. The contact with my oldest son that I have now is just fantastic. He has a birthday on Tuesday, and tomorrow we're going to go out for dinner. And he said, "Dad, my coffee machine broke. Can you give me a coffee machine for my birthday?" And of course I do, and we're going to have a beautiful time tomorrow. And the last year of my recovery was pretty harsh, right? In May, my brother passed away. He died of lung cancer. And in November, just a couple of months ago, my mother passed away. She was old, she was done. And in the middle of these two losses, me and my wife decided to break up. But I didn't have to pick up, I have you guys. I have the fellowship. I have a power greater than myself that I call God that helped me through these things. And I got to do beautiful things. My brother was on a deathbed for about 6 months. And I was there in the beginning every week. And at the end, I was there every single day. I was holding my brother's hand when he died. I even put him in his coffin because he didn't want to be handled by anyone else. And I got such beautiful spiritual experience around my brother's death. I can't describe this, you know. I have a good friend in Ireland. She also had suffered some losses. And I was in contact with her. She said, "John, can you send me the songs that were played at your brother's funeral?" I said, "Okay, I will do so." And I sent it to her. And on Friday evening, I always go to a meeting. And it was on Friday, the funeral. And after that meeting, I went home and I thought, "So I'm done. Now it's going to be the couch, apple pie, and nothing." And then this friend of mine, she texted me. She said, "I'm going to sit in the garden and listen to the songs." I said, "Okay, this may be a better plan. I'm going to do the same." And I sit in this garden, I listen to the songs of my brother's funeral, and I started crying. For the first time, I really, really cried. I had a long cry for like 15 minutes, and it was so clenching. And then I thanked her. I thanked my friend for the experience that we shared together, although she was in Ireland and I was sitting in my garden. And then I lit a garden, I lit a garden, I lit a candle for my brother, and I was praying. And then suddenly, for 5 seconds, the wind blew like a maniac. And I thought, "Oh shit, the weather's gonna change." But the weather didn't change. I said, like, "What? What the hell is this?" And on Monday, I go to work and it was a sunny day. There was no cloud on the horizon. And I was hosing my garden. And then again came the same wind for five seconds. And I really felt the presence of my brother in those 5 seconds, you know. And I got a whole glow through my body and I had a big smile on my face. And that made me so happy that the next day I went to work and I told everyone stories about my brother. And that's such a difference how I handle with this grief nowadays than I used to. And my mother, she passed away in November, and it was very beautiful. On the last day that we met, that she was still awake, she gave me a present. I like Lacoste, and she gave me a white Lacoste sweater for my birthday. And 3 days ago, she had a birthday. And what did I do? You know, I went running. Running is for me like a meditation. And with the running, I was thinking about my mom. And then in my back garden, I have a little hot tub. And I went in the hot tub and I played the songs of my mother's funeral and had a really good cry. And after that, I was looking at the pictures of my mother and me and my brother, and I could feel it again. I got a big smile on my face. I got goosebumps and I was overwhelmed with gratitude and love that she was my mother. And I wore this white sweater that I got from her. And the whole day I took her with me. I took her with me to work and I was telling stories about my mother and my brother. And I'm so grateful that I get to have these experiences now, instead of having it about me. You know, I'm so sad and it's all about me. And this is about my mother and my brother. And then this in between, I have this divorce with my wife that I still love. We agreed that we split up. You know, we were both far from okay when we met each other. It was like a month before my rock bottom, but and she wasn't also wasn't okay, and now we're both okay. But it's time to grow further without each other. And the last time we saw each other in person, we gave each other a hug and we expressed our gratitude of the time we had together. And I don't know about you, but normally my breakups went a little bit different than it's going now. And we're still in the process, online divorce, but there's a lot of love in it. I keep working my steps. I keep doing a lot of service. I love doing service. I'm helping now Belgium, and that's also why with the online thing is, you know, me and a friend, we organized this speaker marathon a couple of months ago. Maybe you remember it. You've been there. It was fantastic. You know, everybody was so willing to help. And now we're helping the Belgium convention, there's so many speakers that are willing to come. And I was asked to make the program, and I just love helping the Belgium to help them grow. They have 13 meetings now, and they 12 meetings now, and number 13 is opening up very soon. So mark your calendar, 23rd, 20, 3 of October, we have the first CA Belgium convention. Just all come over. And this last couple of weeks, I found that I got a bit, little bit stuck in my step 10 and my 11. I was doing it. I do my nightly review. I do my unawakening. I do my prayers. I do my meditation. But it's like ticking off the boxes, right? That I think I'm step 11 asked of me that I improve my conscious contact with God, but I was maintaining my conscious contact, and then I'm losing my conscious contact. And when I realized that I was losing this conscious contact, I started seeking, and with only by the seeking, I already improved. I could feel things, and I felt more happy. And then I just reach out. I made some phone calls. I sent some texts, and was one friend of mine who said, "Why don't you add to the questions, where was I agnostic today?" So that's maybe a good one. And then later on, I got a suggestion, and she said, "I'm doing this St. Francis prayer. And every day I take a question, the first line, start with the first line, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace." And then I got some questions that I have to answer, and my prayers and meditation. And the whole day I'll be aware that I am a channel of his peace. And for me, that's a game changer already. I've been doing it now for a couple of days, and it's already changing my perspective. And I feel again my step 10 and my 11. And it's so good that just by seeking already things start, and then I put it into action, and things just improve. And it's so good to have this unbelievable, loving, beautiful fellowship that I can always reach out. Look, I'm stuck in something. Can you help me? You know, and that I'm not afraid to ask for help. And as I think that Cameron also said now in the in this online thing that I've been asked to help with the HNI, to bring online HNI, to bring it, our fellowship to prison. Online, and I got elected an area of HNI. I had a service position in HNI my whole career in CA, and now I get to do it for area, and now we're gonna try to do it also online. I go at least a couple of times a month. I go to a treatment center or a prison. I need to do this. I work with a couple of sponsees. I go with them through the book. I think my first 1.5 or 2 years of being a sponsor, I was more like a counselor. I was giving advice in relationships, and I'm the last one to call if you want advice in relationships. So now I just stick to the book. We go line by line, we read the book, and we just do exactly what the book tells us to do. And then we get exactly what the book tells us that we're gonna get. And my life keeps getting better, right? Only it's just, even in difficult things, I still have the feeling that my life becomes better and better. We go, like I said, in 1.5 week, we're going to Dublin to the CA convention, and my home group. I go to a men's meeting in my hometown in Rotterdam, and we go with 30 guys, and we go, we're all together in a plane. We do everything together. On Saturday morning, we come together. We go run a little bit. We have a coffee. And I never run in my life. I only did the ego sports. I did powerlifting. I did kickboxing. And because of these guys, I started with them running. It's something that I would promise I would never do. And it's beautiful, you know. We take challenges on. We do a marathon. We go half a marathons. But because of they taking me with them, I was taking medicine for my high blood pressure for 15 years. And since I'm running, I'm done with this medication. You know, I don't have high blood pressure anymore. I'm not overweight anymore. I'm 56 years of old age. I've never been so healthy in my life. It's just unbelievable. And I remember the first time I ran with them, there was like a little molehill. But for me, it was a mountain. It was the Mount Everest, and I had to run on it, and I was almost dying. And then one of my friends came running after me, and he sang, "You Never Walk Alone." And he sang me to this little molehill that I saw was the Mount Everest. But also that is a power greater than myself. You know, I can find this God, I find it in you, I find it in music, I find this power everywhere. And we also, as a group, we go to prisons, we go to treatment centers, we come together like some friend. He saw that I was struggling a little bit with Christmas, you know, for the first time without my brother, the first time without my mother, the first time as a single man. There's also a little bit, I have to get used to that, being single in a fellowship. And this guy invited me to his house, and I already knew his parents, and I was there with New Year's Day, and I could feel this family vibe, you know, that his parents and his wife and his children, and I was welcome there in his family, and that really warmed my heart, you know, that people doing that for me, and that I get to do the same for other people, you know. If anyone needs help, I'll always be there. If somebody puts their hand out, I will always take this hand. I will always be available to help. And then there's one miracle that I really have to tell you. I'm gonna take a little sip. Like I said before, I've been a criminal. I've been a criminal for 30 years, maybe even a little bit more. I've been in prison for 10 years. Now I became a forensic coach. I coach people that come out of prison. So I coach criminals not to be better criminals. I could do that as well. But I coach them to stay on the right path. And guess who's paying my money, my salary? The Ministry of Justice. Parole officers calling me for advice. And I'm now in the process of opening up a safe house for criminal addicts, alcoholics. And this was not something that's my idea, you know. I just follow the suggestions, the instructions, and beautiful things come on my path. And this is just a divine miracle. So if you have any doubts, God does exist. I think that's all for me. I'm really grateful you're having me. And nobody told you today, I love you all. Thank you.
Thank you so much, John, for sharing. Max, over to you.
Thank you so much, Kimia, for your service. Purdy and the whole gang in the background. I'm Mags, I'm an alcoholic, and drugs are most definitely part of my story. It's a pleasure, honor, privilege, all of those words to be here this afternoon. So I need to take a breath because I'm a wee bit overwhelmed right now. To follow Cameron F and John E is talk about standing on the shoulders of giants. This is remarkable. So it was just wow, John, an amazing period of time to listen to your incredible story. And you know, when I listen, it's like we're not here to prove to you that there is a God. That's not our role. We're not here to convince you that there is a God. We're not here to prove that. But John is proof that there is a God. You know, the recovered addicts and alcoholics are the proof that there is a God. And my, yes, Melissa is waving there. Yes, you are proof that there is a God. And this fellowship for me, and thank you, Cameron F, for your history background of CA, because I got sober in another fellowship, but CA, I'm a Zoom baby of CA. This fellowship rejuvenated my recovery. And Purdy knows this story. I hope you don't mind me talking about it, Purdy. But Purdy was the gentleman who guided me ever so gently towards this fellowship. And it's a couple of years later, And talk about a life beyond your wildest dreams. Like that words, those words get branded about so often, in whatever fellowship. Sorry, there's a huge helicopter going over the top of this house. We don't know what's going on here. How strange. Anyway, I'm in Belfast, Ireland. I'm not in any strange part of the world. Anyway, I digress. But I truly, as a result of practicing the spiritual principles, taking the action and showing up, following these few simple rules, have a life 100% that is beyond my wildest dreams. And like John said, it gets better and it gets better and it gets better every single day. And I'm not just saying that because I'm here to speak about my experience. It truly and utterly is my experience. But to get to this point today, we've had to experience the bitter part of it in order to be able to bring to life what actually happens and the transformation that takes place. Cameron said, apologized, or said at the end of his talk that he hoped that he didn't bore anybody or he didn't put anybody to sleep because he's a bit of a nerd when it comes to the history. Let me tell you now, I was not falling asleep because, as he said at the beginning of his talk, it's about knowing what we're part of. The history of this fellowship is so incredibly important. And when I listened to what he was saying, you know, the work that has gone in over the years online to get us to be sitting where we are today is remarkable. The word remarkable is used in the big book over and over and over again because we have to continue to remark on the sensational things that are happening as part of our recovery. And to hear that this event is taking place, to get someone like MJ to Dallas to be able to put forward the voice of the online platform is an incredible thing. Because if it wasn't for the online platform and the creation of online area, then the number of people that would not gain access to this unity, who wouldn't gain access to recovery, who wouldn't gain access to service opportunities, it doesn't even bear thinking about anymore. It doesn't bear thinking about. And in actual fact, I used to be one of those people that said, you have to do this in person. I had such a closed mind. The worldly clamors, my mind snapped shut to the extent that I don't want to go to those online meetings when we came to that period of time in the pandemic. But we had no other option than to accept the spiritual help through a channel that nobody really believed in this part of the world. It was frowned upon. Yet I spend genuinely all of my time online, sponsoring, doing service, going to meetings for my own recovery. Online is a fundamental thing for our fellowship. And I used to be that person that frowned upon it. You know what, like it says in We Agnostics, bristled with antagonism. How could you, you know, talking from this mighty high that, you know, I really put myself out to go to physical meetings because I have to get dressed and I have to get on the bus and I have to take myself somewhere. I make the same effort when I come online, you know. It's really important for anybody that's new to the fellowship, that's new to recovery, that's new and wanting to change your life or get support with change in your life. This is the place to come get it. This fellowship is so powerful. The people within this fellowship are incredible. What CA has taught me, I've never seen service like it. There's a meeting that I go to, and it's 365 days a year. They have speakers Monday through Friday, or Sunday through Friday. And then on a Saturday, they spend all of their time unity, fellowship, doing amazing work for the newcomer. Like, that's a lot of effort. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of passion. And they take it all really, really seriously. And I love John's story about getting the key to open the room. I love that. My group didn't give me that responsibility. They could see that that was too much. So they give me the really important job of being the coffee captain. Really? When I entered into service, I thought I was much more important than that. A coffee captain, I thought I was going to get the little epaulettes and a uniform and a little hat and everything so that I could actually be the captain of this flight. And when I came in and was given that service position, I didn't like the tea that they were using. I didn't like the coffee. I didn't like the biscuits. I didn't like any of the cakes. The cups weren't appropriate. So I decided to change the whole thing and get a better brand of everything. But as a trusted servant, my group allowed me to do that. They gave me the autonomy to be able to do that. And every Saturday morning, I couldn't afford to pay my bus fare to get to the meeting. I couldn't afford my bus fare to get home from the meeting. So I walked about, I think it was 7.5 miles, 7.5 miles in the morning to get to the meeting for 8 o'clock to put the tea and coffee on. And I walked home 7.5 miles to get home from the meeting. That was what made me get up. My sponsor has, and still to this day, tells me, if it's not inconvenient, then you're not doing enough of it. If the service part of my life is not inconvenient, I'm not doing enough of it. Therefore, I've got to recalibrate, reset, and rethink about what time I have available. Because like it says, I'll always quote little pages from the book just so that you can find it for yourself. Because you might think I'm making this stuff up, but I'm not. You know, on page 19 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says we spend much of our time in this effort. And I do spend much of my time in this effort, trying to carry the message and practice these principles in all of our affairs. I've been brought up by my sponsor in this fellowship to only be able to carry this message. Because what I've come to learn is that the more I give this away, the more I get back. But that's not just a benefit for me. The more I get back, the more energy I have to keep on giving it away. It's this thing that never stops giving. We never stop receiving. And that's the part for me that is the life beyond my wildest dreams. To have the energy all the time to keep on going, no matter what one faces in our lives, it's incredible. Nothing can get me down. Nothing can get in my way. And I love what John was saying about all of his personal stories and his family getting together and all of that. I love that. But at the same time, my ego kind of grabbed me when I heard him talking because I felt so inadequate. Because I've never been married. I've never had children. That wasn't my path. And the reason why I raise that is if you're here and you're thinking, well, John's story isn't mine and Mag's story isn't mine, it doesn't matter because your story is your story. And as a result of your story, you are going to be provided with the skills, the attributes, and the recovery that will blow your mind to be able to help the person that you need to help, that God wants you to help. I was never meant to be married. I was never meant to have children because this is the path that God wanted for me. And it's a very beautiful thing because the creation that I have in life now is very different to that of my sister, you know, who had a family and is married and is doing all of the things that I thought I was supposed to do. And through this program of recovery, what has happened is that I've been given this ability to see my life from an entirely different angle, to be so incredibly grateful for every single thing that I have, and even more grateful for the things that I don't. Because it's the same thing. No matter what I have and what I don't, it's by the grace of a power greater than me that I'm in the place where I need to be right now. That's what this is all about. I was never able to accept my life for what it is. And like John, filled with fear, you know, I went out on that. I used on that because I was so terrified to face the world, terrified of myself. Because I wanted to prove to you that I could manage this world well. Wrestling satisfaction, like it says in that story, the actor running the show. Wrestling satisfaction. wrestle with a W because all I was ever doing was fighting, fighting against you and fighting against myself. And the freedom that comes with this program, and I mean true freedom from the bondage of myself and being free from the bondage of myself, I'm so free in this world to even accept you for who you are. I heard someone talk about this recently, and I think it's a very beautiful thing because this is how my life operates as well. I'm constantly, and I mean constantly, surrounded by these people who have this really bad habit of having, stubbornly having their own personalities, which means I have to revolve in the world with you. But what you guys have shown me, what you guys have pointed me towards, is to be able to see the value in everybody. You know that I say it all the time. And sorry if I'm boring you, but namaste, you know, the meaning of that word is that the God in me sees the God in you. I never thought like that before. I didn't have the ability to think like that. I was at a book study this morning and it was all about step 10. And like John has talked about, you know, that step 10, 11, and 12, the practice is so important, our daily reprieve, maintaining that every single day. But the ability to be able to recalibrate and to tap into that resource. Every single second of the day, I have the opportunity to tap into and resource that great reality that is inside me. Who knew all along that it was there? You guys taught me that. I used to come into my home group and I used to sit and judge you. I used to sit and give an opinion on you, all in my own head. You see, I had a little story about you in my own head. I would never say it out loud. I was as nice as ninepence when I met with you. And then when I left, I was like, yeah, whatever. My friends know this about me. I never got on with women. I couldn't be around women. I didn't like women only because I was terrified of women. You know, I was either too good for you or I wasn't good enough. If a woman came into my home group, I've said this before as well. If a woman came into my home group with a designer handbag, like a real designer handbag, I didn't very much like you. And if you came into my home group with a fake designer handbag, I didn't like you either. There was no middle of the road solution in any part of my life. And what the grace of this power greater than me has given to me, which even makes it more spectacular as to why this life is beyond my wildest dreams, is now I am surrounded by women. In my job, I am surrounded by women. Sponsoring women is the greatest gift that I've ever received. And I never thought that I would be that person that would say this. And I truly mean this from the bottom of my heart. Being an alcoholic, being someone that was addicted, is the greatest gift that's ever been given to me. I said previously, when I was in a treatment facility, I was locked up for 3.5 months because I couldn't stop. I nearly died. And I really truly mean that. And by the grace, a place became available in this treatment facility. And I remember calling my sponsor at the time and saying, it's time to go. I'm done. And we went into this place. I had to live with 42 women for 3.5 months. I couldn't stop. And ultimately, when I left that place, I still knew that what you were pointing me towards was what I had to do. I had to work the steps like the desperation of a drowning man in order to get this freedom. Being in a treatment facility in and of itself wasn't going to help me get to the solution where I would no longer fight alcohol one day at a time. I don't fight anything one day at a time. Like it says in those 10-step promises, we've ceased fighting everything and anyone, even alcohol, because the sanity has returned. I lost my train of thought there. I don't know where I was going with it, but it doesn't matter. We'll just keep going with the flow. If I get back to you, that's okay. Oh, yeah. When I was in the treatment facility, we had one of those family interventions a couple of weeks before I left. And my nephew, he was only about 14 at the time, came as part of that family intervention. with my sister. And I wasn't expecting all of my family to arrive, but they came in force, and the facilitator was there. And the only way that I can put this is that my 14-year-old nephew laid everything out on the table. He held nothing back. I think he was primed to say everything on behalf of my sister and my brother and all my other nieces and nephews, if I'm honest. But this young, courageous, brave, intelligent young man sat out everything in front of me that I had done, the impact that I had had on his life, the impact that we had, that I had had on our entire family. I will never forget that day till the day I die. And at the end of his talk to me, I said to him, "I am so sorry," a word that they'd heard a gazillion times before and it landed on deaf ears. And I said to him at that point, "I would not wish this addiction and my alcoholism on anybody on this planet. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy if I had one." Through this program, again, I see life from an entirely different angle. Because being an alcoholic, being an addict, has given me the opportunity to sit here with you guys, to sit alone at perfect peace and ease, to be able to help one alcoholic after another stand shoulder to shoulder, join on that common journey. Who knew? Who knew that that's what would happen for a down and out person found on the streets, going nowhere, who in the end, when I looked in the mirror, I did not recognize the person that was looking back at me. You know, when you get to that point, where you get a glance of yourself and you're like, "What has happened? I never thought I'd become that person." And I did. For anybody that's new here, you might not think it will get worse. They tell us in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that it gets worse, never better. It is progressive, but there is hope. There is hope. And I hope that every single person that comes into contact with this fellowship makes it. That's my prayer. It's a silent prayer most of the time, whilst I'm sitting in meetings, listening to people sharing their experience. That is my prayer. I hope that you make it. Because here's the reality of what we deal with. Just this week alone, Monday, Thursday, Friday, I have three sponsees who have all experienced one of their sponsees taking, making the supreme sacrifice. Three people in 1 week. They couldn't get access to the power. Page 16, it tells us there are those who could not and would not see our way of life. I thought I was going to be one of those people. I thought that that passing was going to happen to me. The reason why I share that is there is hope. But what I became when I was sitting in the rooms, I became a prisoner of my own hope because I wasn't taking any action. And that might sound really strange. In order to get what we get, full blown recovery, not just relief, but full blown recovery and this life beyond our wildest dreams, we have to take the action. And it is a simple program. I don't find it easy. In fact, I find it incredibly frustrating sometimes. But that's why we have to have our daily reprieve where I live every single day in step 10. I'm watching myself every single day for all of those things that are cropping up inside me. Because what you guys have taught me also is that you're never the problem. There's nobody on this planet that can ever cause me any harm. You are never the problem. I am no longer the victim. I watch what's going on inside me, what's rising to the surface in me that needs to be healed. And every time something rises to the surface, that's the little nod from God to say, "Okay, Mags, you ready? for immediate use. You want me to take this? I'm going to take it, but you get ready because you will then have to pass more on to help more people to this solution. Living every single day in step 10 is one of the greatest things that has ever been given to me. I never understood it until I practiced it in the way that it should be. And to learn every single day in step 11, real, true guidance, direction, support, love, commands, all of those things that I never had in my life or thought I never had in my life. They're all there, ever present, limitless, changeless. I can tap into this at any given moment of the day. And the biggest gift of all is to be able to grow in step 12. That's where I have learned the most. It tells us, doesn't it, in Bill's story that faith without works is dead. That's where we enlarge our spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice with others. I didn't realize that step 12 and the sponsorship malarkey that everybody was going on about for the 18 months when I was sitting in the rooms hoping that something was going to happen, you know, by a bolt of lightning or something. Everybody talking about the importance of sponsorship. Like it says on page 89, like life will take on new meaning. You're going to meet a host of friends. 2 years ago, I was never even in this fellowship, not even 2 years ago. I wasn't in this fellowship. And what has happened little by little is that there's this host of friends. There's not enough hours in the day for the connections that you guys have enabled each other to have. It's so incredibly powerful. And that's why, you know, all of the songs that Cameron's playing in his presentation, you know, we won't stand down, or whatever the words were. That song's going to be in my mind the whole time. I'm feeling like I need to take MJ and get her on that flight to Dallas myself, and I'm going to bring a whole brigade behind her singing that song, you know, because this is so important. So important. My sponsor taught me this as well. You know, here in Ireland, the fellowship of CA is phenomenal. Phenomenal. And John, you're going to have a ball when you come to Dublin. If you haven't already been before, I'm sure you're going to, yeah, it'll blow your mind. A life-changing experience again, I'm sure. But my responsibility today, I take very, very seriously with regards to the fellowship because I'm here and it's not just me. That's not my ego talking. I have a responsibility as a recovered alcoholic addict to keep on carrying this message of recovery and what it means to have full-blown recovery. I'm doing this today to keep this fellowship going for the people that don't even know they need it yet. That's why we're here. Because if the people hadn't done what they did right back in the 1980s, 1990s, we wouldn't be sitting here today. We have a responsibility. I don't know if my young nieces and nephews are going to need this fellowship in the future, but I'm going to make sure that I stand at the door. I'm going to continue standing at the door at an online platform and keep on letting people in, keep on welcoming people. Because the difference between an online meeting and a physical meeting isn't is it's there isn't one really, because the love, the compassion, the welcome, the message, the unity, the recovery, the service, it's all the same thing, and the solution is always the same. It doesn't matter modem to modem or a physical meeting, the solution. That being the power that is greater than you and how you gain access to the power is the same. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, you will gain access to this power that is within you. You will have a cast iron guarantee that you will have a psychic change, a personality change, a spiritual transformation, an emotional transformation, because what you will be given by a sponsor armed with the facts by them, about themselves, is that you will be able to have a spiritual experience, a deep, really deep and effective spiritual experience that will 100% ensure that you will be able to tap into your creator that lives inside you, that lives in your heart in a way that is 100% miraculous. That's what it says on page 25, and that's what's become to be my truth. I spent too long blotting out the consciousness of that intolerable situation that I was in because I thought I knew what I needed. I came in and I judged you. I gave an opinion on you rather than looking at what you were pointing me towards, which was an incredible fellowship, an incredible recovery program, and a team of people that take this stuff really, really seriously. So I want to thank the organizers of today's event. It is absolutely amazing to be even asked to join you guys. It has been a pleasure, an honor, a privilege to listen to Cameron F., to listen to John. The fear has disappeared. I hope that what I've said has made some sense. And thank you for the amazing opportunity to be part of this. And for the newcomer in the room, I say this all the time, don't just keep coming back. You got to stay. You got to stay. Where else is there to go? Online. Online's good. Online is really good. Experience the physical as well. But we back MJ and on the little road that she's on, get her to Dallas and all of that. It's a great city. She'll have a ball when she's there. Thank you so much.